Welcome back to the Planet Eclipse podcast. Are we still calling it that? I don't know. Whatever. Anyway, it's the podcast. You know it. You love it. It's back again. We are here today to talk about the fabulous new release from DJ Buttstuff Barbie. It is really a long time coming, a full year in the making, if we're being honest.
Yeah.
And this is Super Monster 2. Blood and guts.
Blood, ampersand, gut.
Yes, the ampersand is very important.
Here we are, ladies and gentlemen. We have finally done it. We have finally released something.
Yeah, it took us a while for a lot of factors. We had been planning for our next release, our next big, like, long-form release, to be basically an album. But then it just didn't come together. There was a lot of burnout associated with that. There was just too much going on. So we decided to scale back, change our plans a little bit, and instead we are doing this. Super Monster 2, Blood and Guts.
Mm-hmm. And I think that this project does kind of almost sort of make up for the year-long wait that it's been. I feel like this hits hard enough that we can kind of sweep it under the rug, the fact that it's been about a year now, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I tend to agree with that. This project has been a long time in the making, and additionally, or I guess just in addition to this, we have also, in the past few weeks, been releasing the deluxe editions of the first two EPs, the Roadhead Deluxe and the I Do It For Attention Deluxe. And each of those includes one new track.
Those bonus tracks are, they're something else.
Yeah, I should specify that those bonus tracks, that idea came a good while after the concept for us to be doing Super Monster 2. Super Monster 2 was kind of always in the cards, but in order to make this return a little bit more bombastic, we had decided to do, you know, just like a solid month of releases, beginning with the Roadhead Deluxe with Dry, followed by the I Do It For Attention Deluxe with Old Folks Home, and yeah, then culminating in Rolling In My Grave, followed by the full version of the Super Monster 2 Blood and Guts.
Yeah, it's 4 weeks back-to-back of Buttstuff Barbie releases. Although I'm not sorry for making people think that Super Monster Deluxe was coming. You got the sequel instead, so I think you guys will be okay.
Yeah, it's better for you anyway.
Yeah, because if we're being honest, Super Monster really didn't need too much work like the other two did.
Before we jump in fully to discussing the EP itself, we should probably just talk briefly about the two bonus tracks from the earlier releases.
Oh yeah, totally.
Do you want to kick us off with some discussion of Dry?
So when I first set out on the idea of, okay, I want to do these deluxe editions, I'll do like a bonus track for each one of them, I knew from the get-go that I wanted to do Old Folks Home for I Do It For Attention. But with Dry, that was one that I was kind of stumped on for a while, because we had kind of hit all of the appropriate beats within the concept for that project, and I had kind of settled on this whole, like, kind of road hog, like, fucking with a biker gang kind of thing, and I remember I brought that to you, and then somewhere down the line, I think it was you that had pitched the idea of like a ride parody-esque kind of thing, and then that was what it became, was just an outright parody of Ride by Lana Del Rey.
I don't remember whose idea it was initially to do a Ride parody thing. I don't feel like it was me. I'm doing a quick search. Yeah, no, the initial idea was I sent you a sketch for something called Hog Wild.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Which you did not like. Go hog wild and ride me like Ari side to side me. Back to the handlebars with your handlebar mustache all up inside me. Go hog wild and squeal like it hot and hard as steel. on the open road, drop an open load, I'll give you something you'll feel. That's actually not bad. I kind of like that.
I mean, it is really funny, but it was
too much, and it kind of steps on like truck stop a little bit, I feel like.
Yeah, and it just wasn't quite the same vein, because I kind of wanted to go more in the direction of Ride, where it kind of like this, I wanted to do like this big, like overly cinematic kind of thing, but we ended up just kind of going in a different direction completely, so.
I think it's better for it, because we cranked out Dry in like maybe 30 minutes. It was not hard.
Yeah, no. Especially because that's a song that we're both so familiar with and could just easily throw out a bunch of shit for that.
Yeah, literally, once you said Ride parody, I was like, hold my beer, I'm doing this.
Yeah.
And then I, like, let me see the exact time of these, the timestamps on this. Yeah, it's like literally 15 minutes start to finish.
I knew that you doing a parody of a Lana Del Rey song was just the end all for you.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very familiar with that, having done like East Coast in the past and all those other ones, yeah.
Which is why it would make sense that you wrote all but like four lines in this.
Yeah, admittedly, I did write like pretty much most of it. Lord help me now, it's been dry for so long. I was trying too hard, got rug burned from your schlong. That's like your only contribution to this.
Yeah.
The rest was me.
Yeah, because I mean, you were just spitting it out so quickly. Like, there wasn't even time for me to like think about anything. Like, you were just going so quickly with it, and everything was just so good from the get-go that there was no need for me to write anything. Like, you just took right over on it and killed it from the start, so.
This is practically a first draft, but it worked. I think Dry is a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think we tweaked maybe like two or three lines slightly just to get like specific phrasing right with the text-to-speech, but yeah, it was, this is like a live-to-tape moment as far as Butt Stuff Barbie goes.
Yeah, essentially. I think that's probably everything we have to say about that one. So, Old Folks Home, I can kick us off on. This one, you had come up with a number of months ago, and you originally pitched it as just like something in Florida with an old folks home. And I was like, got it, old folks home. And you were like, yes. And then when it came time to actually make the song, you were like, no.
We'll see. The thing about Old Folks Home is that when we first started working on I Do It For Attention, we were kind of leaning towards this idea of just like this like Miami stripper storyline, which we didn't really get very far with, because the one we had, Look But Don't Touch, which got changed, and then the one that I had kind of written about like this guy falling in love with her as a stripper and she's like, what, just look at my tits, which that became Tits and Ass.
All right.
But when we were doing like this whole like basically like slutty Miami thing, I was like, I don't know, isn't like Florida like retirement home central, like, you know? And so then I just kind of got this idea of, well, what if she's like just going around as like a slutty candy striper to like an old folks home and just like fucking around. But that never really got off the ground at all, because I Do It For Attention kind of shifted so much from the original draft that it really would have just never, it wouldn't have been a fit with what we ended up doing. But then when we came back to a deluxe edition, that was like my immediate thought of, well, we could do it. You know, I have the chance to finally get this one off the ground, because I don't know, I liked the concept.
Well, yeah, it was certainly like a fun one for you to go a little crazy on, because like obviously I did most of the work on Dry as far as getting it based out. This one, I didn't do a whole lot on. I changed like four or five lines that I thought weren't as strong, and the rest was just kind of you going crazy and doing it on your own. And I think it works. It isn't probably the strongest. I don't think either of them are the strongest tracks of their respective EPs, but they add a little flavor and a little texture, and that's fine.
Yeah. The production for Old Folks Home, it was really heavily inspired by VIP by Kesha, because
yes,
I found, I hadn't discovered that song until more recently, I think when you were talking with somebody about it on the server. And I went and listened to it, and I was kind of thinking, this was kind of what I always pictured I Do It For Attention be. Like, this kind of bouncy, kind of, like, electropop kind of thing. So that was why when I was doing Old Folks Home, I was like, this song kind of has, like, that funky kind of swag to it, but it's also kind of, like, gross and sleazy at the same time, which is kind of perfect to kind of wedge in with the rest of I Do It For Attention, because it's, like, kind of fun and bouncy, but it's also just, like, gross.
And, of course, there's the sample on there from Young and Free.
Yes.
That is always lovely when my older work is being revived and given to a new audience.
Well, and it really only made sense because I started thinking about it when I was writing for Old Folks Home. I was like, this really kind of is the poor man's Young and Free. Like, this is Belinda's version of that song, in a sense. So... plus, with I Do It For Attention kind of just being one giant love letter to TOSTB almost, it just made sense with the bonus track to kind of throw in one more nod to it, because why the hell not?
I definitely understand that thinking. That's probably all we have to say about the deluxes, so yeah. Let's get into the meat of this discussion, which is Super Monster 2 Blood and Guts. So let's talk about the conceptualization of Super Monster 2 just a little bit. Initially, we knew, like, I would say pretty much from the start that we wanted to do a second one when we were doing the first one.
It was a really weird process because, you know, from the start we knew we were going to do a second one, but we also had completely different plans for things between 1 and 2. There was supposed to be a whole other project there that would have driven more of the story forward, and shelving that album really did change the shape of Super Monster 2, because certain events...
Well, to a degree.
Well, yeah, but...
I would say that narratively, it's still kind of hitting the same beats, because this is a little bit of a spoiler, but the album is still kind of going to narratively take place in between Super Monsters 1 and 2 when we get back around to that. We do have a plan in place for that. This is still on the books, and it's probably going to be either the next thing we do or the thing after that. That it definitely still is going to happen. Yes, I would say there were a few things that were changed, like slightly, just as far as us having certain tracks that would need to be in place for references to make sense.
Yeah.
And just our general thoughts on things. That said, the initial first concept for a Super Monster 2 was called Super Monster 2, The Revenge of DJ Buttstuff Barbie.
Yeah.
Which was going to be like this evil twin thing. abandoned very quickly. We didn't really get into that. But that was my first thought about like what we would do with this.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been a very funny concept. Like, we could have really ran with that, but I think it was just the way that you were trying to kind of work it into a narrative standpoint from the start that I kind of didn't like as much, because it felt a little too forced to kind of be like, oh, this happens, and then, oh, there's this evil twin that I was kind of like, eh, like, I feel like it's a little bit of a reach, but I don't know. It's definitely a concept that we should explore at some point, because it would be really funny to go to, like, Belinda's interactions with an evil twin.
I still think there's definitely, like, narrative value there, just as far as, like, maybe over the course of one song or something.
Yeah.
After that was abandoned, I think the next title we had was actually the one we ended up going with. I pitched a couple after that, Super Monster 2 Disco Death and Super Monster 2 Satanic Panic was one that you brought up.
Yeah.
But I think ultimately, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So we went back to Super Monster 2 Blood and Guts. This is probably a good time to start kind of talking about when all of these songs were conceived.
Yeah.
So I went back through and found the dates on which I started writing all of these individually, or in one case that that you first brought up the concepts. Well, two cases, I guess. So the first song to be conceptualized was Blood and Guts, unsurprisingly. But that was in February of 2021.
Shit. I forgot which is, that. Like, we were still working on Roadhead when you were throwing that around.
Yeah, I'll talk about this more when we talk about that track specifically. Yeah. But yeah, there was some pretty wild stuff around then. But yeah, February 2021 was the first time I brought that title up. And May of 2021 was the first lyrics I wrote for that. So that one has been knocking around for a while.
Yeah.
And then in between those two periods, from April of 2021, was the first time that Till Death Do Us Part was brought up. Mm. And that one was brought up by you.
Yeah.
I think the one after that would be Rolling in My Grave in June 2021.
Yeah.
That one was seriously considered for the first Super Monster, but once we started to base out where we wanted that one to be conceptually, we just thought that one was too much of an outlier and ended up kind of scrapping it. After that would be a song that kind of got melded into and became Rolling in My Grave. That one was first worked on in January of 2022, and it's called Claws. We cribbed probably like half the lyrics from that one to make Rolling in My Grave what it is.
Yeah.
After that would be Satanic Panic and Pumpkin Boobies. Those were actually on the same day. It was in March 2022, and the first one was Satanic Panic, which basically I just like came up with the title and said what if.
Mm-hmm.
And then we kind of ran with that, tossed some ideas around, and then after that I was like, okay, I turning it in for the night. So I went to take a shower, and while in the shower I was thinking about what is the stupidest thing we could do for Halloween, and this ineffable insane little riff popped into my head. Pumpkin boobies, pumpkin boobies. So that became Pumpkin Boobies, and I wrote most of that song immediately after getting out of the shower.
Yeah.
And that was on the same day. Yeah. And then the last one was in April of 2022, and that was Gash Slasher.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is the history of the start dates for Super Monster 2 Blood and Guts.
This project has been about a year and a half in the making.
So let's begin at the beginning with Rolling in My Grave. Talk to us a little about that.
So after we shelved the album and realized that we were going to have to kind of change some of the plot points around, especially with how we were going to start Super Monster 2 and kind of provide context about, you know, how everything kind of comes to be. We had two different drafts for a track. We had Rolling in My Grave and we had Claws. Claws was the one that you had pitched, and it was this whole kind of, it was a lot darker of a moment. And it was a lot more, well, I say a lot more vengeful, like Rolling in My Grave isn't. But it was, it kind of leaned more into like some spooky horror kind of stuff.
It was more slashery, like
it was
murderous.
It was. I don't know. I wanted to kind of do something a little campier, something a little more stupid. And that was kind of when I got the idea to rework Rolling in My Grave a little bit. Because the idea of her coming back to life purely because bitches were talking shit, that's a Belinda thing. She would do that. Whereas Claws didn't really feel like, from what I remember of it, I don't think that there was necessarily like a specific reason that she was coming back. Like, she just kind of made it clear she was coming back.
Well, Claws was kind of the one that I had planned to be the comeback track after the album.
Yeah.
So there are reasons that are in the album that we can't really say. It changed a little bit.
This is, I think, the one that I nailed a sound down for last, because it took me so long to get a sound that I liked with it. I started, the first draft that I tried to do, I tried to compose the whole thing myself, and it was sort of there, but I couldn't get the right pieces to click, and so it kind of felt a little lifeless. But what's interesting is one of those instrumentals that I sent you you listened to it and then said, why did the title Satanic Panic just pop in my mind? So that was right. That was where that title came from, was one of those demos. And then eventually I was just kind of playing around with some tracks, and I got this kind of like sort of aggressive, kind of almost disco-y number. And I thought, this could work really well if it just goes straight into Blood and Guts. Like, we go from her kind of having like a little like disco comeback into the disco bloodbath that she does after that. And it's not the track that I thought it was going to be when I first started making it, because I wanted something a little more aggressive and industrial-esque, but I'm not mad at where it ended up.
One thing that I should probably make clear about Rolling in My Grave is that it's not an attempt to like streaming pander. We had conceptualized this one from the beginning as being a short song, like more of an intro than a song.
Yeah.
But like still satisfying enough on its own to be valuable, let's say. So Claws, I had originally conceived of as an intro, and Rolling in My Grave was originally conceived of as a full track. So when the two kind of got mushed together, it became Rolling in My Grave, an intro. The initial Claws concept was sort of me expanding on the Super Monster title track, just sort of those general ideas there. Like, yeah. My initial thought behind the Claws idea was this set of lyrics from the Super Monster writing sessions that didn't get used. The I've got a candy bucket grasped in my claws, cunt hunt thing.
Yeah.
But those specific lyrics didn't get used, so I wanted to take those and do something else with it. So I came up with this kind of like grave to runway concept of like being really bad and like deliciously evil. So yeah, that was sort of the genesis of this one. I think that's kind of everything beyond the fact that we chose it to lead because honestly, I think narratively there was no other choice for a lead single.
Yeah, because I think that if we had kind of just thrown any of the other songs out there as a single, I think people would have been really confused, like, what the hell's going on here? But yeah, Rolling in My Grave at least tells you, hey, this is what it is now. She's back, because she's pissed.
Yes. So let's move on to Blood and Guts.
I love this song so fucking much. This is probably one of my favorites we've done recently. We knew from the get-go that we were going to do a disco-y sort of sound, and that was always kind of reflected in the lyrics, especially the early draft that you had written. I remember, this is the funniest thing to me, I remember the first instrumental draft that I made and sent to you. I remember thinking, like, this is so cool. Like, it was a pretty bare bones demo, but I still thought, like, oh, this has so much potential, this is really good, he's gonna listen to this and he's gonna love it. And I sent it to you, and do you remember what you said to me?
I honestly don't. You send me a lot of stuff.
That's fair. I remember this so specifically. You said it sounded like video game loading screen music.
Oh.
And for some reason, I don't know why it bothered me as much as it did, but it like pissed me off. And I was like,
oh, wow.
I was like, oh, he thinks this isn't good enough. And I sat back down and reworked the instrumental. And it's really funny to look back and think you were unjustified in saying that, because when I went back and listened to that demo again recently, I was like, I thought this was good. It was definitely a very clunky mess, but I always thought that was kind of funny that I was so pissed at the time. And then looking back, I'm like, why was I ready to die on that hill?
Exactly. I mean, like, there's so much of this that's like goes into the whole kill your darlings thing, because you'll come up with something better.
Yeah.
And usually we do. There are like maybe two or three times where I think something went out that I wasn't 100% satisfied with. This is not one of those projects. I think Blood and Guts in particular is one that we have discussed this, but I feel the same way about it as I feel about Mile High Club, in that when it came into my head, it had this perfect melody attached to it that a text-to-speech voice simply cannot recreate.
Yeah.
So I will always think of it as being less than, because in my head, I still hear that, and it's, oh God, it's just better. I can't get around that. But nonetheless, I do think this song is really cool. Some fun facts about this song include that it was conceptualized the same night as a song that is going to be on the first LP. DITC is the acronym for that one.
Okay.
And it was written the same night as Unwrapped, which is another Halloween song that we did not end up using this year or last year.
We've written a lot of Halloween shit.
Yes. Unwrapped is one that I refuse to let die because I think that one is super funny. We just haven't been able to fit it in any of our projects so far just because we have limited space. We're not going to do a Halloween album because that would just take so long.
Yeah.
And be so much effort. Maybe we'll fit it in some other year. Who knows? Who's to say?
Yeah.
But Blood and Guts, this whole imagery behind it, I think I really wanted to go into this kind of like direct continuation of the Rolling in My Grave thing with the forest and this misty moor and this like club just in the middle of it, because I think that's such a cool visual idea and it just gives me all these concepts in my head for like a music video. So that was my main inspiration behind the initial writing phase of this one. You did a pretty decent amount of these lyrics. I came in for edits. I did the chorus. That was the main bit initially. And then you kind of based out the verses and I came back in to do edits on them.
Yeah, I mean, the imagery in the lyrics really is incredible, especially in that first verse where, you know, it's kind of this, she just dug herself up. She's like bloody and dirty and disgusting. She's in the same dress that she was buried in a year ago. And she's like rolling into this club and she's like, I'm gonna fuck some people up. It's just so, I don't know, it's just really funny to think about her like walking in this club, just like literally looking like she just crawled out of hell and nobody really batting an eye at it.
Yeah, and we had gone into this a little bit on our discussions for the cover of the album. Originally, the LP1 cover, that you were going to be wearing this very particular dress. And in the initial conceptualization of Super Monster 2, we were going to have you in that same dress digging yourself up, and it was just going to be like gory and tattered.
Yeah. I had tried to go for that kind of visual when I was doing the cover photos, but the embarrassing part about it is, when we did the first Super Monster cover and I did those shots and me covered in blood, that was fake blood that I made using like chocolate syrup and food coloring. And I tried to recreate it, and I don't know if it was just because I got some measurements wrong or if it was like the brand of food coloring, it was like not good or whatever, but when I mixed it, it did not look right and there was nothing I could do to fix it. And if I had tried to use it, it literally would have looked like I just had like these off-colored like dark red splotches on me. Like it wouldn't have looked convincing. It would have looked like I had like spilled like some cherry sauce or some shit on myself.
Right,
which was a shame because I would have loved to have gone in a direction like that for the cover, but we still got the masterpiece that we got, so I'm not too bent about it, but it is a shame that we couldn't follow through with that same concept.
Right. I do love the cover that we ended up getting. I think it makes a really bold visual statement. We have that kind of Agnes-y type background. I sent this initial like rough draft of it that was like straight up a ripoff of the Magic Still Exists cover.
Yeah.
That kind of guided the process of making the cover. So I really think what we have there stands out and is unique and visually striking. So I'm pretty happy with that.
It is. It really is an incredible cover.
All right, so let's move on to Satanic Panic.
This one, I cracked this joke to you, I think, last night when I said this song is like the Natural Wonders of Super Monster, in the sense that you pitched this idea, you had all these lyrics, and I went in and tried to add in my own stuff. And when I sent it back to you, you were just like, no, just let me handle this. Because you wanted to lean so heavily into the like Satanic Panic sort of references, whereas I was kind of just making it a little more kind of dumb and slutty. But
right,
this was one that we did have to do a lot of back and forth on this one, mostly because we would have a really good line and we would try to put it in the song, and for some reason it just would not translate correctly, whether it was like it would get buried in the mix or that it sounded choppy, or, you know, so we did lose some pretty good lines and references because of that. But I mean, you still had plenty of material at the ready. So,
oh yeah.
I'm very happy with how it came out.
So this one was kind of an unusual process, because I would say our usual process is that I'll write a first verse and a chorus, and then I'll let you do the rest. Like, maybe I'll have a little bit of a bridge.
Yeah.
But this one, you wrote the chorus, I wrote basically both the verses, and came in a little bit for the bridge. So it was kind of a reverse of the standard style. And let me see.
No, you wrote the chorus on.
Did I write the chorus?
You wrote the chorus.
I don't remember that. You did. I thought I just edited this chorus.
No, you wrote the chorus. But you had written a lot of it. And I think really my biggest contribution to this song was the bridge, because I wanted to kind of lean into like the idea of like the crucible, where they're like, oh, I saw her with the devil, you know, like everybody like whispering about her. And there was a line in there that was supposed to reference execution. And I think you were like, we're already getting a little heavy handed on references, so maybe let's pull that one out. But I do like the line that we swapped it out with.
Yeah, no, I just looked it up. You wrote this chorus mostly.
What?
The buy me a drink and I'll speak in tongues. I'm hotter than hellfire. Show me some love. I'm the nightmare you've been dreaming of. I'm wicked and wild. You can't get enough. This is your original draft of it.
When did I write
that? I'll give you my number. It's, you wrote this on March 6th of 2022. Yeah.
I do not remember writing any of that. I thought that that was yours because it was already there in the document. I didn't.
This was you.
Oh my God.
I'll give you my number. It's 666. Everyone at the bar is scared of this bitch. Is she a monster, a demon, a witch? I was sent by the devil to cause some havoc. Show me you my horns and cause a satanic panic. That's the original chorus that we came up with for that. Obviously, it changed a lot. Most of those edits were me. But no, that this bass line, this was you.
See, it's really funny because I remember when I sent you, I think it was when I sent you like the first like full demo of the song where I had, plugged in a lot of the second verse in the bridge, and you went back and pretty much tore the whole song apart. And I remember you making comments about lines in the chorus, and you were like, this reference is overdone. We've done too many lines like this, da 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 da. And I was confused by it at the time because I was like, you're the one that wrote these. Like, I don't know why you're making it. I didn't remember that I even wrote that. But that makes sense now why you were saying that. I was like that's weird.
I suddenly understand your reaction to that. Yeah, no, that was you. That's why I was tearing it apart a little bit, just because I knew it wasn't my work that I was critiquing. Though I think I did end up critiquing a couple of my own lines.
I think there were like one or two lines in the first verse that I think you wanted to change after the fact.
Uh-huh. The basic concept for the song, she's at this bar and she's just like generally being a little bit devilish, and at the same time that's like our baseline. But on top of that, I also wanted to do some heavy referential stuff to the actual satanic panic of the 80s and 90s, and I suppose even into today in the like 2010s, 2020s. So initially, my first draft of the first verse was very, very heavy on references. There was one line that was like, McMartin, Michelle, Dungeons and Dragons, get with me, you'll fall off the wagon, which we just had to change because it was too much.
It was.
But in order, those references are the McMartin preschool case, which involved this old woman who owned a preschool. She was accused of satanic ritual abuse, which was basically like, they thought she was worshiping the devil and like throwing infants into a hell mouth in her basement and stuff. And there was like no evidence of it. It was all this just like poorly constructed arguments based on bad psychological interrogation techniques, basically, of these children and having all these false memories implanted. I think that period of history, that moral panic associated with that is really interesting. So I know a lot about it just generally, which is why I wanted to put these references in. McMartin was the first one. Michelle was the second part of that. That's a reference to kind of the thing that kicked off the satanic panic of the 80s and 90s. It was this book that was released in 1980 called Michelle Remembers. And it was a very similar thing where this psychologist had interviewed this young woman named Michelle and done this like fallacious huckster memory retrieval thing, which was totally fake and unscientific. But basically the whole process was that he would lead her down the path of remembering fake memories that she didn't actually have of being ritually abused by a satanic cult. Yeah. So that's McMartin, Michelle, and then Dungeons and Dragons. Dungeons and Dragons obviously made it into the final cut of this song, and I really pushed for that because I think that's one of those things that's more enduring as far as being remembered even today. But back in the 80s and 90s, obviously that was a big, big thing in the satanic panic. All these like Christian wives and mothers were scared that their little babies were going to be indoctrinated into Satanism by Dungeons and Dragons, yeah. Which is the funniest thing in retrospect because it's the nerdiest shit.
Yeah, it's a tabletop game. And they're like, oh, the table.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I was going to try to make an adrenochrome reference, but then I realized that that word is just unwieldy, and the fact that I even know that, probably it would distract from the rest of the song, actually. So instead, I put in a Pizzagate reference, which is kind of considered to be like the modern revival of the satanic panic, with all of these people believing that underneath some pizza restaurant in, I think it's Queens or something, that all of these famous political figures and like Hollywood elites are satanic ritually abusing people, mostly children. Of course, all false, as it says in the song. But I think the psychological phenomenon behind that is, again, interesting. And the fact that we're seeing the rise of moral panics like that again in the modern era. So the fact that they would say, these patrons in the bar, that it's fake, it's just another Pizzagate, that would be like their modern frame of reference for that versus like the old stuff, the satanic panic and all those trials about satanic ritual abuse. So yeah, that's the big part conceptually. The initial part of the instrumental that you sent, you wanted it to be inspired by, and I am quoting here, Young Rapunzel and Controversy.
Yes.
So that's Young Rapunzel by Azealia Banks and Controversy by Natalia Kills.
I wanted to go for like this like aggressive, industrial, sort of very like in your face, making a big statement kind of song. Something that really kind of gave the energy of some skank that just found out people are talking shit about her, you know, and it's like I'm sure you've met people like that in your life who just go full aggro when they find out people are talking about them.
Right.
It was supposed to be like a big over exaggeration of that, but I just couldn't get it to work. So, but at least we got a good song out of it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. This one is actually probably like my favorite or second favorite of the whole record. I think it really involved a lot of work directly from me. Like when I was working on that second verse and getting all the lines right and basically completely rewriting it from what it was, I kept like two of your couplets but rearranged them.
Yeah.
And the other, I think it was 8 lines that I just completely scrapped what you had and rewrote something. And this was like probably at 2 a.m. and I was like, okay, we really have to get this fixed. We're running out of time here. Mm-hmm. So I just put my nose to the grindstone a little bit, cracked into it, and I'm very happy with the results.
Yeah. I remember I woke up at like 4 in the morning because I had work that day. I'm half awake, barely conscious, and I opened my phone and I saw the notification and I just get this wall of text.
Well, what I first did was I went through line by line of the entire song as written, and note that I had to listen to the lyrics that Morgan had written first because he did not provide them to me, and individually write those out first, and then say, like, beside each line, I like this, I don't like this, I like this, I like this. And then after I did that, I sent that, and then it was probably like 2 more hours later, I sent my edits, and that was another whole wall of text.
It was. God, I remember looking at it, and I was like skimming through it, and then I just closed out of Discord. I was like, I can't do this. I don't have the energy right now. I was still trying to wake up. I couldn't even pretend to process that. But yeah, it's funny because when you sent me those rewrites and everything, I started plugging all the lyrics in, and it wasn't until I was about to crank out a full demo, I think, that I finally went back to you and said, hey, by the way, what's with the Pizzagate thing? Because I looked into it, and I was, like, skimming the Wikipedia article about it, but I, like, couldn't figure out what it was. I could figure out that it was something about, like, a pizza place at during the time of an election or something, but it was never, like, explicitly clear about what it was, and so that was why I finally had to message you and be like, hey, what the fuck does this mean? Because I'm clearly not as well-versed on my satanic references.
Yeah, that's a pretty modern one, and it's one that was so common in, like, right-wing circles that I would understand why most people didn't pay attention to it, because it isn't important in the wider political conversation these days, just because it's so thoroughly debunked at this point. But during the 2016 election, it was a story that was definitely getting some national attention. Yeah, that's why I found it interesting that it had seemed like culturally we had learned so much from the Satanic Panic and coming forward from that and trying to learn ways to be better and not turn everything into a witch hunt.
Yeah.
And yet we still do something like that.
Naturally.
So yeah, that was just my thinking behind that.
It's also a really funny line when you kind of think about it, like in the context of the song, of like her kind of going around the bar and like behaving this way, and then people being like, oh, it's fake, it's just pizza. Like it sounds like such a douchey line in the context of the song. Like I can just see a couple of like frat bros on the other end of the bar just fully like, oh, it's just fucking Pizzagate, dude, you know? Like just an extra layer of shit into it that I just love.
I think the culmination of this song is really what sells it for me, with her like literally being the devil in this bar, kicking off what is quite literally a real satanic panic, in that she has used her devil magic powers to becalm the sea of men, so to speak. Yeah, I like the imagery. I like the references. I'm really proud of this one.
I think I sent Harry like a file of, I took like the instrumental of the bridge from Old Folks Home and the instrumental from the bridge of Satanic Panic and put them together and just sent it to him, and I was like, I made the same song twice. They are very similar structurally, and in terms of instrumental they have like the same kind of like bounce and sleaze to them. It was just funny because I didn't realize that I did it until we were almost done with Satanic Panic, but I'm not mad at it. Like, it, I don't know, it works.
I think if anything, like, Satanic Panic is kind of the evolution of the sound, because Old Folks Home, I mean, like we said earlier, it's kind of underworked for what it is. It was a bit of a last minute thing, and it's not the best thing on the EP, but
well, and I think that kind of adds a little more of the charm to it, because it does sound like stuff from the early drafts of I Do It For Attention. Like it has that earlier sound.
Mm-hmm.
So it just kind of worked with it. That's why I didn't really care too much.
Yeah, it gives it kind of a natural evolution.
Yeah, that's okay. Satanic Panic.
So, that's Satanic Panic. Let's move on to Pumpkin Boobies.
So, admittedly, for a good while, I did not think this song was going to work out. I knew, I was like, I'm going to put my best effort into this, and I'm going to try to make this work, because the concept is funny, and I know that Sean really likes this one. But I also was, like, prepared, in case of emergency, to throw together like a backup track if I had to. Like, I was gonna try and pull something like Night of the Living Dead out of my ass if we had to swap it, because this was another one where you had kind of a really specific vision for how you wanted it to sound, and that was something that I was not going to be able to do very well, and I also feel like it wouldn't have fit with the rest of the project as well either. So
I should explain that a little bit. Yeah. So like I said a little bit earlier, I came up with this one in the shower and immediately came out and started writing. And my thinking behind it was I wanted a song that was really stupid and kind of like sonically and melodically just felt like off, like something's wrong with this. Why doesn't this feel right? And you want to have a pop song be like immediately hitting the ear in this very specific way,
yeah,
where everyone's engaged and like involved. With this one, I wanted there to be like stumbling blocks the whole way. Like just when you think you understand where it's going, I want you to get tripped up a little bit and be like, oh, well, what happened there? That didn't work. Because the whole concept of the song is like sexual frustration.
Yeah.
Because in the story of the song, Belinda doesn't understand that she is not flirting correctly.
The whole song is built on like misunderstandings and just like, I think the original first verse that you sent me, it was kind of this whole thing of like, she's at this Halloween party or this bar or wherever, and she sees this guy that she used to be involved with, and she's like, you know what, I'm just gonna make a scene. And so she's got like the pumpkin boobies going on, and then she kind of realizes that it's like tanking and not working. I at some point got the idea of, what if instead of her just trying to like cause a scene in a public place, it's like her attempting to flirt with somebody and just fucking bombing, like, hard. And so then I was kind of like, okay, well, where does the misunderstanding come in? Because how do you get from point A to B? How do you go from, you know, hey, you come here often, to hey, my tits are out and they're orange? What if this guy tells her that he's like really only into like goth girls, like the real like spooky girls who love Halloween, and she doesn't know what a goth girl is, and she just kind of fixates on the, oh, he likes Halloween. Well, what's more Halloween than two huge pumpkins? And so she's like making an ass of herself, and she's like falling apart, like she's like, she has to catch herself and be like, wait, that's not sexy. She's falling apart, and then the instrumental under her is also just crumbling. It just keeps getting weirder.
When you said the first time, hey, what if we do some kazoo on this, I was like, go for it, fucking go for it. Just destroy that shit. Like, I want this to be weird as hell. I want this one to stick out.
And it sure does.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. We should also note that this one, we view it as kind of like, as a pair with Satanic Panic, in that they're sort of about the same thing, like the same experience, just told from two different viewpoints.
Yeah.
Like, the first one is her fantasy about like what she feels like. Like, she's sexy and powerful, like Satanic Panic, and she's like a devil with horns and stuff. And this one is just her putting some brown tassels on her breasts and painting them orange and showing them to people.
I don't know. I just thought it was funny to, because, you know, when I'm working on a project, I think about, you know, how all of the tracks kind of fit together, especially from a story standpoint. And that was kind of the one bump that I would always hit, is how do we go from her being like this ultimately like badass demonic, like she has every man in the bar wrapped around her finger, to hey, I'm making a huge embarrassment of myself. Like, how do you go from that so quickly? And so that was when I kind of thought, what if we're not going from point A to point B, but we're still on point A? You know, it's the same moment. She thinks she's being sexy, when in reality she's just like probably gonna get arrested for public indecency.
Yeah, I think this one, a lot of my lines were left intact after that first verse, at least to some degree. Like, we use the same words, if not in the same order. And I like that in this case, because it does give it still kind of like a first draft-y feel, which adds to that sort of sense of unease about this, like, something is wrong with this pop song.
Yeah.
I really think that creates an interesting mood and adds some texture to this project.
See, I remember when I first sat down to kind of try to carve out a sound for it, I was thinking, okay, so if this song is kind of her, like, kind of being bad at flirting, and you had made it clear that you wanted something just kind of like weird and wonky. I was going through all these tracks and stuff, and I found that bass line that you hear through almost the entire song, and I thought, this kind of has like a
that
weird,
kind of wobbly
like,
one.
Yeah, like it's got like that weird kind of cartoony like rubber hose vibe to it. Like it almost kind of feels like a knockoff Billie Eilish moment.
Yeah, just a little bit.
Yeah. It sounded like kind of weird and creepy, but it's also like bouncy and kind of stupid. And when I threw a beat under it, it had that kind of movement of a club track, but it was like just kind of off kilter from the very get-go, you know? Because it does hit your ear a weird way. And then I just kind of kept building the rest of the song, and the more that I put into it, I thought, how can I be disruptive? What can I do that's kind of going to add another layer of fuckery to this? And so then we started getting like these like 80s drum kit little like doot doots in the second chord, in the second verse, and then you have this like percussion that comes in later that is erratic and almost entirely random, with these like random little like plucks and plinks, that it's just so much happening all at once that you kind of feel like your ears are almost being assaulted a little bit. And
yes, especially in that bridge.
Yeah. And then that was kind of when I thought, I was like, if I'm kind of ramping up the bat shit in this, I kind of have to end it with like just a huge moment of what the fuck is going on here. And that was when I got the idea of, what if I just start playing the fucking kazoo? Like, what if I just start swapping out tracks with recordings of me on a kazoo? And it's like, this song starts like a little wobbly and weird, and you're kind of like, oh, okay, this is interesting, to, you know, the end of the song where you're like keeled over in laughter because you have no idea what the hell just happened, but you're still exactly. like kind of into it.
As a result of the kazoo, I made a list prior to recording this podcast of the order in which things were finished. Pumpkin Boobies had actually been the one that we like finished first, but the kazoo was like the last thing we added to that song, so that gets bumped down to the end. I can talk about the finish order at the end. We'll get to that.
Yeah.
Next up, we have Gash Slasher. That is hard to say.
Yeah, Gash Slasher. I think I pitched the concept for this song.
I do remember that I came up with this title.
You did.
I think you based out the concept.
Because I think we were talking about how we wanted to do another, like, slasher movie moment in the same vein as The Call. And so then we were kind of throwing some stuff around, and then I thought, what if we just kind of flip it? Like, what if, you know, she's talking about, oh, there's a killer on the loose and everybody's so terrified of him, except he's my boyfriend and the victim is my vagina. And that was when you threw Gash Slasher out there, and then
we just kind of took it from there.
Yeah.
And got Harry involved to do the DJ Rare stuff.
Yeah, because once it started kind of picking up on the Dickmatized vibes, that was when I came to you and was like, what if we did another DJ Rare moment? Like, it really was, like, the Halloween version of Dickmatized. Like, it only felt natural, you know?
I should note that in doing research for this track, I came across the one specific piece of trivia that we noted that should be brought up in the podcast when we recorded it. So, that piece of trivia is, towards the beginning of the song, when Belinda is naked at her fridge, making herself a snack. Do you remember what the snack was?
Shit, I don't remember, but I want to say it's something really stupid.
It is a cheese stick. Yes, by preparing herself a snack, she is unwrapping a cheese stick.
Because you were the one that threw out the cheese stick. I remember that now.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it made us both laugh so hard at the time that we just had to bring that up later on. So yes, canon, you heard it here.
Yeah, this is official, folks.
Yeah, she was eating a cheese stick during this song.
Yeah, because I think I remember I was talking about like the narrative, oh, he's, you know, like sneaking in the house in the middle of the night, and it's supposed to be this creepy, like, oh, the killer's in the house, but it's really just like this random hookup, like sneaking into her house in the middle of the night, like trying to be quiet. And so then you were like, yeah, and what if he like sneaks up on her and she's like standing there in the kitchen just like eating a cheese stick? Yeah,
just the mundanity of it.
Yeah.
To provide a little contrast lyrically from the rest that's so like elevated, and coming off of Pumpkin Boobies, which is really weird, and Satanic Panic, which is like very high concept. Blood and Guts is all like dancey and visual and rolling in my grave is kind of like silly, but also like very elevated. And this one is a little more down to earth, I guess.
Yeah. This one feels the closest to like a proper butt stuff Barbie track in the sense of it's just, it's slutty and it's stupid.
And we didn't feel like it had to be anything more than that, really. I've talked about like which tracks of these I think are kind of better conceptually and which ones are kind of thin. And I think this one and Rolling in My Grave are a little on the thin side just because there's not a lot of meat there to work with. But they still feel necessary just to give some contrast, you know?
Yeah. I don't know. There's not really a lot of interesting stuff we can say about this because, I mean, like you said, it's a pretty thin concept and we kind of just cranked it out pretty quickly.
Yeah, we did like a few rounds of edits on the DJ Rare stuff. That was our main holdup on this one, was just getting Harry involved and waiting for him to churn out a good set of lyrics that we could turn into a verse. He provided that within like probably like 3 or 4 weeks after we first reached out and said, hey, here's what we've got.
Yeah, because when we did Dickmatized, I pretty much just sent Harry the full track and was like, can I throw DJ Rare on this? He didn't really write anything. I just kind of sent him his verse. But when we said, hey, we're going to do another DJ Rare collab, I was like, okay, let me actually let DJ Rare write something this time.
Yeah. Since we had the time for it, we felt like we should.
And I mean, it was good. It added some sort of lyrical contrast because now you have this third person with a completely different writing style coming into the mix, and you can kind of feel that in a lot of DJ Rare's lines that, you know, there was a different approach, there was a different thought process to these lyrics, you know?
When you write a lot of songs, it eventually gets to a point where you can recognize your own writing style versus someone else's.
Yeah.
Like, there are a lot of songs that I've written for DJ Buttstuff Barbie that are very specifically like, oh yeah, I wrote that.
Yeah, like, oh, that's a Sean one.
Yeah, no, that's my line. That word indicates me that I wrote that probably at like 2 a.m.
Yeah, usually if it's multisyllabic, Sean wrote it.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
If you've never heard this word before in a pop song, it's mine.
Yeah, if you have to Google a line in our song, that's Sean.
Yeah, usually. That probably like mostly covers it. Gash Slasher's pretty straightforward. I don't think there's a lot more to talk about.
Yeah. Oh, this is a good time to kind of mention, because this isn't something I think I might have talked to you a bit about this before, but a lot of these songs have instrumental tracks that were pulled from a lot of other unused stuff. Like a lot of the early like Super Monster 1 instrumental demos that we didn't use. Some of the I Do It For Attention stuff, other random little bits and stuff that I had done. The most interesting one is that, like, kind of electric guitar-esque synth that comes in the, like, extended part of the chorus. That was originally pitched to be used for the chorus of Super Monster. That was like, 8 different things that I made and sent to you, yeah. And there was another one in there. I want to say... No, never mind. It's Blood and Guts that has one of the unused Stigmatized tracks.
Oh, right.
Yeah. The pre-chorus synth was originally the chorus of Stigmatized, and you told me, hey, that's a little dull change in. I was like, okay.
That's probably everything we have to say about Gash Slasher.
Yeah.
Let's move on to Till Death Do Us Part. Okay, first things first, this is my favorite track.
This is a really good one. This is a really interesting one. For a lot of different reasons, but I'll go ahead and address the elephant in the room, being that this one is very personal to myself, because the original concept for the song when we were writing for Super Monster 1 is just that it was a song about her like stalking somebody, and she was like, I'll never leave you, to you know, till death do us part, you know, like, I'm always gonna follow you, da-da-da, you know, just some kind of stupid stalkery shit. But then I went through a very, very emotionally messy breakup right around the time that we were finishing up Super Monster. And so at some point down the line, I started thinking about, like, Super Monster 2 stuff, and I kind of was revisiting that song, and I thought, what if I kind of took this and kind of fueled this song by a lot of that, like, rage and confusion and the like sadness and the heartbreak and everything, what if I kind of took that and just crammed it into this song and just kind of made it this, just this huge fucking moment of, you know, why are you leaving, I love you, da da da, just a bunch of melodramatic bullshit. And that was why when I sent you, because I wrote the chorus and the bridge to these, and I think that you had tried to make edits at one point, and I was like, no, I'm sticking to these.
Yeah, I think it was, I sent you verses initially or something, and you said, I don't really like that conceptually. I also tried to edit the chorus, and you really did not like that.
No. No, and then I noticed that you were kind of like, almost like walking on eggshells when we were talking about that song. Like, I feel like you were worried that I was just going to be like hell-bent on everything that I was doing, but...
I kind of was, because I could tell you cared about this one a lot. Yeah. So when it came time to finally write those verses at the end, because they were the last thing we wrote for it, you had to just send me like your early drafts for verse ideas. And I kind of used that as a basis for expanding them into like full proper verses.
Yeah.
The like, what the fuck framing device, that was from you, but like pretty much everything else was original to me.
Well, and it was because I knew that the chorus and the bridge were kind of heavy-handed with the melodrama and the obviously kind of personal digs, and I knew that if I tried to write verses, it was going to be more of that. So that was why I kind of handed it over to you and was like, here, because I know that you'll give me something that'll match the rest of the song and it'll be a little more disconnected from that, because obviously, even though you had a lot of insight to what was going on at the time, because I kind of told you all about it, you weren't the one that like went, you know, you didn't have the firsthand experience of it all. So it was easier for you to separate yourself from that than it was for me.
Exactly. Yeah. And the song's probably better for it. It definitely has a lot of texture and contrast, and there's a lot of interesting things going on in it.
It really does sound like a Super Monster track.
I think you could like plonk this down right at the end of Super Monster 1 in the place of like Haunted Heart or something, and it would fit.
I would get rid of Hellfire personally.
Replace Hellfire. Well, obviously, but Hellfire is there for a reason.
Yeah. I've said it a million times at this point, but that song literally is just Haunted Heart on crack. And that was that was kind of always what I wanted from the get-go. I'm really surprised that it turned out the way that it did, because I kind of felt like I felt like what I wanted was a little too ambitious and that it wasn't going to translate the way I wanted it to. I don't know, I think the pieces just fell in place really well, especially with like the break at the end and the way that it all just kind of builds into this huge moment, and then it just kind of explodes. It just it's so good.
Well, yeah, it's very much like following the Super Monster blueprint on that. Yeah, because like Sexcution and Super Monster both have those like very long drawn out bridges which are kind of partly instrumental, and it fits with them, certainly. As far as the origins of this one, I did do a little research to find out the exact origin date. This one came to us on April 18th, 2021, in concept, and it was first mentioned between work being done on Digmatized and Fuck Shit Up.
Wow.
Ancient, I know.
Yeah. God, we've really always been all over the place, though.
We have.
We've always kind of been working like 3 and 4 projects ahead of ourselves somehow.
Yes, I should also mention that this was conceptualized on the same day as the Super Monster cover concept, the very first one, the Graveyard Shoot.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's definitely been always like thinking 3 steps ahead.
I think this song was originally a lot faster. I think the first draft that I tried to do of it, it was like 10 beats quicker than what it was now. I think it was the same thing with Satanic Panic. Satanic Panic was originally a little quicker, but then I slowed it down.
Yeah, Satanic Panic was like fast. It would it would have been hard to squeeze lyrics in there.
Well, and that was the thing, is when I changed the BPM on that, the lines, I didn't touch the line, but when I dropped it, and it was like a 5 BPM difference was all it was, and the lines just suddenly clicked perfectly into place. It was weird.
Yeah.
And I think it was the same thing with Till Death Do Us Part, where it was just a little too quick from the beginning, and then when I went back and fixed it, it just worked so much better. I know we have the guitar break in there now, but I think I had originally pitched doing a dance break instead, because I felt like there was a chance the guitar would not work out as well as I wanted it to, and I was just kind of trying to clear the air on, hey, this might have to be the backup.
Yeah, and I said do both and we'll pick the best one. And the guitar, it definitely felt like the best one of the two. Somewhere we had been before, I'd say. Well, a little bit on like Candy Cane, but
But I mean, we had already done the dance break before with Super Monster, and it kind of helped bring just kind of another level of like aggression into the track, you know? Because you have these like wailing, almost screaming kind of guitars after this like emotionally explosive bridge. Like it really kind of feels like the climax of all of those emotions, which I don't think that we could have achieved as well with just like a regular dance break.
yeah, it wouldn't have had the same feel to
No.
it. It needed to be something a little more unique, specific, maybe, is the word. So that's probably everything for that part of this, as far as the individual tracks. So I have my post-it here with the order in which everything was finished. So we can go through that.
Let's do it.
The first one we finished was Rolling in My Grave, because we felt like we had to. And then immediately after that was Blood and Guts, which, because there's a gapless transition there, again, we felt like we had to. Gash Slasher was actually the next one after that.
Yeah, I did. I worked on Rolling in My Grave first because I knew that was like the lead single, and I figure, okay, let me knock this one out just so it's done. And then obviously Blood and Guts felt like the next best thing because it's gapless, da 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 da. But then I did Gash Slasher because I thought, well, we're also gonna have to like, you know, we're kind of working out of house this time around because it's not just you and me who can crank lyrics out like it's nothing. We were sending it off to a third person who we had never worked, well, I had never worked with lyrically before, so I didn't know how quickly Harry would be able to give us. So I wanted to be able to give him as much time as possible.
Yeah, without having him feel like he's rushed or anything. He's not as quick about things. He's very deliberate and careful with the way he writes. It's a very different style from how we tend to do things, or like maybe I tend to do things. I'm just very quick at things. I've done a lot of this, so I can bash out an entire song in like 5 minutes, but not everyone can do that.
And it was, I mean, it was good because it gave us time, you know, if we had to do any rewrites or, you know, if it took them a while to come up with stuff, it was better to get that one knocked out quickly so that we had more time to work out the fine details since, you know, we did have a third person in the mix.
And then after that, we worked on Satanic Panic and finished that one up. That one was the 2 a.m. writing for me. That was the big final push on that one. And then it was probably like maybe a day or two after that that we basically called that one done. Then Till Death Do Us Part was the fifth to be finished, again, because we felt like we needed to have that one done last to really wrap everything up and just give those final little pieces of flavor to everything. And because of the whole, we tried to do the lyrics earlier and it hadn't really worked out. So after the Satanic Panic 2 a.m. thing, I was feeling a little more confident about being able to write something good. So yeah, I was able to bash that out pretty quick. And then last but certainly not least, Pumpkin Boobies. We had actually finished Pumpkin Boobies even before Rolling in My Grave, finished it in the most general sense. But then the kazoo was the very last thing we recorded for this. So, yeah, we had to get the kazoo done, and that is why it is technically the last to be finished.
Well, and it's because we had knocked out a full demo of the song and we were like good with it. Like the lyrics were fine structurally. It was like we just needed the kazoo and a mix and everything. But I didn't bother doing the kazoo until I sat down to do the mix for the song, which probably wasn't the smartest idea. It probably would have helped to have had it already recorded. But I got to sit there for like an hour and a half and I did a good couple of takes. Because there were some t where I would kind of breathe into it a little too hard and the kazoo would squeak and then I'm sitting over here laughing my ass off. Yeah, it was an interesting process. Have to listen to these tracks and figure them out and then play them back on a kazoo.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt.
One of the tracks, I don't remember which one it is, but one of them, like two or three of the notes in there are very flat and I just kind of left it
Oh, yeah.
because I was like, you know,
well, I think it adds to it.
Exactly. It kind of adds to it that you have this, because I think it makes it funnier when you kind of hear like a sour note from the person just going ham on a kazoo, you know, like they're into it. They don't care.
Yeah,
they're
having a good time. Really are going hard on that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let me go to my like random final trivia set of notes. So I went back and found the very first track list we ever tried to bash out for Super Monster 2 Blood and Guts. Track one was a then untitled intro, which obviously became Rolling in My Grave, Claws, whatever you want to refer to it as. Second track was Blood and Guts, so Blood and Guts was always there and always in that position.
Yeah.
The third track was, we have colloquially referred to it as the zombie STD song. You eventually gave the title Night of the Living Dead. That one's basically not written, but it's always a title that we had floating around. Ultimately didn't make it this time,
sadly,
but we had thought it was going to initially. Tracks 4 and 5 we had nothing for, and then track 6 was Till Death Do Us Part. As you can see, we have always had Blood and Guts and Till Death Do Us Part as part of this concept for this album, and they really are the centerpieces of it in the broadest sense. I think Till Death Do Us Part is really probably one of the best Halloween tracks we've done thus far. I would say that Super Monster are really kind of the two that exemplify it the most for me. And then as far as other things, we have one other outtake from this EP, and it is called Hacked. I can't really say anything else about that one in case we recycle it, but it's an interesting one. I'll put it that way.
We have so many good songs for Halloween.
There was another one. The title would give stuff away, so I can't say it. I did conceptualize it for this one. Anything else you want to share about the future of DJ Buttstuff Barbie?
Personally, I'm going to take a little bit of a breather because I've kind of cranked out a lot in the span of like 3 months. I think that it is time that DJ Buttstuff Barbie took a proper vacation just to
relax a little bit. I tend to agree with that.
Yeah, just to, you know, just to relax a little bit, you know.
You know, just go to the beach and have a pina colada, you know? I think she deserves a vacation. She's earned one.
Yeah, she does, definitely. That's really kind of it, you know, is just take a vacation, take some time to kind of, you know, figure shit out.
I think that pretty much covers it. That's our situation. We hope you enjoy Super Monster 2 Blood and Guts, and keep your eye out for more. Bye.